Hello, friends, and welcome back to another episode of Crime at the Family Table. I am your host, Alyssa, and I'm joined today by my lovely friend and co-host, LaTanya. How's it going, LaTanya? How's your week been going?
Honestly, it's been going pretty well. I'm happy to pretty much be here again for another week. I have my coffee and my water, so I'm ready to go.
Awesome. So let's just jump right into it. Today's episode is about 8-year-old Relisha Rudd, who has now been missing for...
8 years? Almost eight years.
It's been 8 years?
Yep. 2014.
Oh my God, it has been 8 years. Okay. Who has now been missing. Let me paint a picture for you. Relisha, along with 1,000 other people, lived in a D.C. general homeless shelter. Now, this shelter was infamous for having the worst reputation in the area. It used to be a huge hospital, and thankfully in 2001 it was shut down. In 2001 it was shut down. It turned into a shelter.
Warning, this case talks about child endangerment, potential child death. If this or anything we discuss is triggering for you, please click out, take care of yourself and your mental health. I am sure in the future that we will have more suitable episodes for you. Disclaimer, the opinions shared today are our own. We are not affiliated with any organization or institution.
The facts. Here we go. Relisha Tanal Rudd was born on October 29, 2005. She was the second of her mother Shamika Young's children, and the family lived in an apartment in the southeastern, I don't know why I can't talk today, in the southeastern DC neighborhood of Congress Heights. Shamika wasn't a single mom for long, as she met Antonio Wheeler in 2008. After 5 months of dating, he moved in with the family. Unfortunately, in 2014, the family was evicted from their apartment due to their inability to pay rent, so the family ended up in DC General Homeless Shelter. DC General was infamous because it used to be a hospital, and it had the worst reputation in the area, and the shelter was no better. In 2001, the hospital got shut down, and they turned it into a shelter. Originally, the capacity was for 270 families, but they often crammed over 1,000 people into the shelter. A Washington newspaper in 2010 reported the shelter as being uninhabitable. Cockroaches, water damage, moldy walls, people sleeping in closets or on their clothes on the floor was how the DC reporter described the shelter. I said it so many pauses. It's how the DC reporter described the shelter. Now, despite all of these things, everyone always describes Relisha as having a positive attitude. Her teachers loved her and described her as helpful and bright. She would often stay after school to help the teachers clean up. But come to find out, Relisha was just avoiding trying to go home. She even faked an asthma attack one day to avoid going back to the shelter. So some of her teachers noticed and made reports to DC Child Services. Shamika, mom, had been charged several times with child neglect. So the reports they were making for Relisha were not the first reports that DC Child Services had received. One of the charges she had against her even said that she used physical force against her children. Despite this, she was able to keep custody of Relisha and her siblings. So this is where the story gets a little more complicated. Once the family was settled in DC General, Shamika, mom, met Khalil Tatum, a 51-year-old janitor who worked at the shelter. Now, Tatum had a reputation for being close with several of the residents there, even though that was against policy. He was particularly cozy with the young girls, and they ranged from different ages. Teenagers were usually the oldest. Relisha quickly became one of his favorites. Tatum gave her a tablet computer. He took her to see Disney on Ice. He gave her some pretty dresses. And near the end of February 2014, Tatum reported
that. At this point, we're definitely seeing from the outside looking in, he's already breaking policy. he's doing these things that are very suspicious because he's putting himself in the lives of these families. He's breaking policy. He is starting this a pattern that is not, because he's already not even supposed to be talking to them like that. Now he's taking one of the participants there out on Disney on Ice. That is very suspicious behavior. And it makes me wonder, like, how couldn't the shelter know about this? But this is also a shelter that's cramming 1,000 people in a 200 some capacity shelter. So they're already breaking policy in other ways. So it just definitely felt like he just went under the radar and was allowed to get away with certain things there.
Exactly. Like, you have this 51-year-old man and he seems to only be kicking it with little girls, young girls. And honestly, mom is no better because she's allowing this to happen. I don't know how many random grown men you've ever been around where your mom is like, sure, you met him 3 days ago, you can go to Disney on Ice with this guy, and oh, I'll accept this large gift. Like, that in and of itself is crazy to me.
Yeah, like, it feels like this behavior is signs that bad things are to happen, because you have this person that's just inserting themselves in people that are experiencing adversity to such an extreme, and he's placing himself as being able to give her experiences and a life that is beyond the shelter by just giving her things like candy. And it's not something small. These are not small gestures. He's presenting large ticket items, that things that Shamika is not able to do for her daughter.
And I think, I don't want to say mom's innocence, as far as like her mental innocence. Like, I don't know if she was thinking like, okay, here's an opportunity for my daughter, because I believe she only relationship with her only daughter. Here's an opportunity for my daughter to be able to see some things and experience some things that I know that I can't give her. So if this guy is willing to do it, then I'm going to let her go. But at the same time, it's like, where was your adult maternal instinct that was like, this random guy is taking a liking and an interest in my child, and he hasn't invited me. I could almost see if he was like, hey, I'm going to take the both of you to Disney on Ice, or I'm going to take the both of you and do this thing because I see, you know, a bright young girl and I want her to have some, like, some experiences that you just can't give her.
Right, and something outside of the shelter.
Yeah, because the way they describe this shelter, it's horrible. So I can't imagine that Relisha wanted to stay there. Like, anytime a baby is faking an asthma attack to stay in school, there's got to be something major going on in her home environment.
Right, and when you're seeing the school is becoming a safe zone, because kids are in school 8 hours a day, and they see that space as somewhere safe, and she's probably able to have room for herself, and she's building relationships with her peers and her teachers, where she feels a sense of safety that she's not getting in this shelter, because it is not being made to be a safe space. Because if they're already accommodating 100 times over the limit, they're not able to properly service all of these individuals. So the potential for health safety and physical safety is counterintuitive to saying you're helping people in a shelter and you have all of these kids and you have all these families on top of each other, young girls, young kids, their parents, other kids, other parents. And it's just like, it's not just this man that's there. Like, it's not just Tatum that's there. Like, there's potential, like, other men and women there that could potentially be a hazard.
Yeah, and I don't know how he went so far under the radar. Like, they interviewed some of the girls that he was, like, particularly close to, because they all were calling him godfather at one point. So they interviewed some of them, and every girl was just like, "This, I don't get it. Like, this doesn't sound like him. He's so nice. Like, he would never do something like that." So I don't know if he just took a special liking. I would go out on a limb and say she probably was the youngest of the girls that he was, like, familiarizing himself up with.
Oh, my godmother and godfather, I have aunts and uncles. But it has never been a time in my life where my mother was just like, oh, yeah, you can go with this person, unless she has a rapport with them that spans years. Anyone that's my uncle or my aunt, they would have to have been friends with my mother prior to even me having breathing life into this world. But the fact of the matter is, he knew this girl for a very short period of time, and he's injecting himself into her life. And I just think that, in my opinion, we're going to find out surely like how Mr. Tatum's relationship gets pretty dark, is that he was just basically waiting for someone to catch the bait. And she took the bait. And the thing that I've heard countless times is, you're not just grooming the kid, you're grooming the parent, because you have to let them trust you. Because a parent that has their guard up, it's not going to allow you to take their kids to Disney on Ice. It's not going to allow you to give a tablet. It's not going to allow you to give their kid candy. Like, I've even had seen people give back candy that was innocently given to a kid to say, no, throw it out, or this and that, because they just don't want it to be that they're accepting things from strangers, because that starts a pattern where they're like, it's definitely giving very much, I am trying to get this little girl, I'm trying to get you so comfortable with me, and this little girl so comfortable with me, to do something extremely damaging to this child.
Absolutely. I think it's given, what was the Netflix thing?
In plain sight.
Like, yeah. It's given, I'm going to put myself, insert myself so deeply into your family that now I'm over here entangled with your mom. Like, that's what I feel like it's giving. But it gets better. So near the end of February, mom reportedly trusted Khalil Tatum to watch over her daughter. So when he asked if he could take Relisha to spend a few nights with him, his grandmother, you can't see me, but I'm doing air quotes, grandmother, mom said he could. You're allowing your 8-year-old daughter to go spend the night with a grown man and his grandmother.
Whom you've never met. You've never met this grandmother. Like, that's the thing. It's just like, you're not, he knows everything about you and your situation, but nothing about him is ever exposed to you. His life, like, you, like, for example, like, you never meet his wife. You never meet his family, but he can say that he has this magic family there. Because here's the thing, in what reality does this little girl get to spend time with a woman at a place? Because, and I feel like it was so easy for him to say that, because in reality, like, my alarm bells would just go off to say, what woman? 2 days where? Because you're not taking her anywhere. One, even if I met this woman, you would just not be able to take her with you.
Spoiler alert, there was no grandma. And if you think about it, random side note, Khalil Tatum was 51. Your grandmother has to be at least 70, I'm thinking.
Right. Which means her mother would be like 90. Or 80, like, it just, it like don't make the sense that you think that it does. And the fact of the matter is that that's what I'm saying. You have to question Shamika's mental capacity at this point, because the numbers don't add up to where a grandmother that you've never met this woman, and you're just like, oh, okay, man I just met with it while at this shelter, who, whatever. That's what I'm saying. He's building up. He has built up. It was small things, gifts, outings, and and here's the thing, that's what we talked about before, is that he gives this gift and he takes her out on the town, and he takes her out places, and then he's brought her back. So in this instance, he's just like, you know, I've taken her out before. I'll bring her back. We're going with someone else is going to be there.
Let me see how far I can test these boundaries. So a few nights, we're turning to a week, and it got to the point where going for a month. But you think to yourself, how could a child, especially a school-age child, just be gone for a month and nobody noticed? They didn't notice. The teachers were like, where Alicia been at? And they called mom, trying to figure out where Alicia is. And mom was like, oh, yeah, here's this doctor's note. She gave a doctor's note to the school. They said Alicia was undergoing treatment for a neurological condition. I don't know about you, but I remember being in school and certain medical conditions or records were with the school. So no one has any prior knowledge of her having a neurological condition. But now suddenly she's undergoing treatment and here's this faking note. So when the signature, when they looked at the signature, it was Tatum's signature. So mom tried to say that Tatum was her doctor. He is a janitor at the daggone homeless shelter. He is not a doctor.
And the thing about it is that if it was so innocent, why is she okaying the lie?
Mm-hmm.
That makes you look very suspicious to me, is that you're okaying the lie. You're putting him in the air of, instead of you just saying she went with her godfather, you concoct with him a story that she has a neurological condition that is not even recorded, and she has never been taken out of school to the point where she went for treatment of such a neurological condition. There is no record of it. And it's just the fact that you say to yourself, do I do this lie or do I tell the truth? And why am I telling the lie? If she's actually going to see this grandmother, why do I need to lie?
Mm-hmm.
Which makes me question the grandmother story.
Oh, it turned out that there was no grandmother, but I feel like I can safely say that all of this was Tatum's idea because, right. I mean, forgive me, but I saw an interview with Shamika Young and she's like one light bulb, a few light bulbs short of a chandelier. So for her to concoct this whole story about Relisha having a neurological condition and to come up with this fake note, that sounds more like Tatum would be bright enough to do that. Right. And she just kind of went along with it. But I completely agree with what you're saying. She went along with it. She knew it was a lie. She knew he's not a doctor. She knows he's a janitor at the shelter. So any sane person would be like, why do we have to make up this lie if she's just with you and your grandma?
Right.
But clearly, she knew more than what she was
saying. And if she's only going to be gone for a couple days, how does that edge out to like weeks of her being gone, like days, more than 2 days? The part I go back to is, was there communication afterwards where a story was then concocted? Because I just don't understand how she can just go from, he's telling me the grandmother story to, oh yeah, well tell them if anybody asks, I'm her doctor.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like a story that's been built on when she was gone for multiple days.
She had been gone for a month, the teachers notice, and then mom comes up to the school with the fake doctor's note. The school counselor actually figured out that Khalil Tatum is not a doctor. So she contacts the authorities to report Relisha missing. On March 19th, 2014, nearly a month after Relisha was last seen alive, the Metropolitan Police Department of the District of Columbia finally reported her missing. There's a bunch of other stuff too.
A month, like they say the first 48 hours is essential to solving a case. A month, like you're putting away like loads of groundwork that is not being done. And you're putting, I mean, this is just literally trying to roll uphill with your front wheels having holes in them.
Come on.
Because it's no way like that Why is she not worried more? Why does she not care more? Why is she so calm that her daughter has been gone a month? And it makes me think that in and of itself, I feel like she's just thinking that Relisha is better off without her. I am beginning to feel that she has concluded that, well, maybe they took her in because I'm a bad mother. Because there's no other way, like this is just, like that's just my opinion, that she has probably concluded that Tatum can give her a better life because he's taking her out. He's giving her a tablet. They probably got, like they probably, she probably has a life that she can have. Not thinking that, oh, my child's in danger, but oh, or he'll bring her back. That there will be a point where she'll just be brought back and this will all be able to be explained away.
I can believe that that's her thought process. Like I said, she definitely gives to me some undiagnosed or unmanaged mental health issues, because just the way her demeanor is when you see her in interviews, she's very flat. There's no tears. There seems to be no urgency. She's just kind of like, yeah, this is what happened. She went with him. And then, you know, I'm just waiting for him to bring my daughter home. As if she just went to McDonald's real quick to get a Happy Meal and she'll be back. Mm-hmm. So they didn't even put out an Amber Alert for days after this little girl goes missing. So she's missing. The last time she was seen was March 1st. That's when she was last seen with Khalil Tatum. So March 2nd, the police say that they know that Mr. Tatum purchased, among some other items, a carton of black 42-gallon contractor trash bags. If you have a huge trash can like I do, you know, 42 gallons, that's a big bag.
That's an industrial bag. That's for somebody that is like that's like a construction site bag. Like people that are clearing out your house to take down your walls, so they got to sort that stuff out. It has to fit like big ticket items.
We talking about debris, all that. In a 42 gallon bag, you can fit a small body.
Yeah.
Not long after that purchase, he was seen in the area of the aquatic gardens for a period of time. It does have a body of water that seems to be large enough to potentially make somebody disappear.
Let's say during the fall months, it almost looks like swamp. Like, not swamp in like a bay, but like more like the wetlands. Like, mm-hmm. If you're doing the wetlands, and then they have the lily pads, which is more of the pretty parts where, like, during the spring where it looks beautiful. So it's definitely a beautiful sight. Something that if I was a little kid, I would want to see.
Like, okay,
I would want to be it. Like, this would be something where I would want to go with my mom or somebody all the time. Because it's pretty, like, beautiful flowers, butterflies. It's nice. This man who is buying these things, like, where is the red flags? I'm going to need Walmart to start, or, like, stations to be like, red flag purchases, big trash bags. He does not look like a construction man. What does he need these big trash bags for? Because, and then they just go to this beautiful site, and it's just like, it just makes me question, like the process of where Relisha is. The timeline of where she is, because like, she's not seen often.
So eventually the police start to search the park and aquatic gardens because they are suspecting, at this point they know that Relisha has disappeared, and they're tying Khalil Tatum to her disappearance. They eventually, here's the kicker, they find Tatum's wife. Yes, he had a wife, Andrea Denise Tatum, age 51, they found her at a suburban Maryland motel, shot dead. This prompted police to issue an Amber Alert for Relisha. Why there was no Amber Alert prior to this, I don't know. But now I guess they're like, okay, now this is an urgent thing. We've got a dead body. And this dead body is attached to the person that's attached to this missing kid. So they finally put out the Amber Alert for Relisha. And they start to really do a more extensive search for her. Hundreds of police officers, they have firefighter cadets that were aiding in the search. They had some divers, underwater cameras, aerial surveillance, search dogs, cadaver dogs. They went to the Kenilworth Aquatic Gardens to look and see if maybe they could find a body there. It appears the body has been dead for about 36 hours. That's a quote from DC Police Chief Kathy Lanier after she told reporters that the cause of death was a suicide. So Khalil seemingly murders his wife in this hotel, allegedly murders his wife in this hotel room, and he goes and he kills himself and he's found in a park dead.
Well, it is found that the bullet casing that is used to kill him is also the same bullet casing that killed his wife. So it's pretty safe to say that he did kill his wife and then himself.
Mm-hmm. And why? Like, we don't have any major background information on the relationship with him and his wife, but I feel like she caught on and figured something was fishy, or maybe she saw Relisha, or maybe she heard a plan about her and was gonna talk, and then he ends up killing her, gotta quiet her, and then he kills himself. Him killing himself makes sense, but it doesn't make sense to me, because what was the point of killing your wife if you were just gonna off yourself anyway?
Is a better part of menace to society. He is a person that just steals and takes and just, he encroaches like a leech on society and just drains them dry. And then because he can't face the music of what he's potentially done, he would rather just say, oh, okay, life, peace out. And selfishly, instead of just doing it to himself, he decides, oh, I'm gonna take my wife with me.
Which is just
selfish.
Khalil kills himself, gunshot wound to the head, and that's kind of where a lot of the leads, the real leads for Relisha stop. She's been missing since March 2014. It is now February 2022. Relisha would have been roughly 16 years old. There's still hope that she's out there, but of course, the DC Police Department say they are still looking for her. And if anybody has any information about her disappearance, we encourage you to please call 202-727-9099, or you can text 50411.
Yes, please, everyone. We have to get her justice, find out what happened to her. Good, bad, or indifferent, we have to look for her. And if in the future we find any legitimate fundraising and things like that in order to fund searches for her, we will let you know in the future.
So now I'm going to take just a quick second in our discussion to talk about a brief update. It's not funny, but it's funny. So a few years back, if anybody remembers Jerry Springer, you remember his bodyguard, Steve. So Steve Wilkos had his own show. I think it's off by now, but Steve had his own show. And guess who ends up on Steve Wilkos' show? Shamika Young, Relisha Rudd's mom. Shamika's boyfriend at the time, Antonio Wheeler, who it seems like got really close and developed a really father-daughter relationship with Relisha. And Shamika Young's mother, Relisha's grandmother. They all end up on the Steve Wilkos show. And if anybody's seen the Steve Wilkos show, this is not Oprah. So there are dramatics, there's falling on the floor, there's crying, there's cussing, the audience is cussing people out. So Steve Wilkos is doing lie detector tests on all three of these people. Antonio takes the test, his results come back that he's telling the truth. Grandma takes the test, her test results come back that she's telling the truth. Guess who chooses not to take the lie detector test? Shamika Young. Why? I don't know why she would choose not to take the test, but she was adamant. She's like, I'm in contact with the police every single day. There's no reason for me to take this. I had nothing to do with my daughter's disappearance. Antonio's adamant. He's like, I know that my ex has something to do with Relisha's disappearance, and I'm going to keep her name out there, and I'm going to keep fighting for her. I'm going to like search and search until we can't search anymore. A man who is not even her biological father seems to be doing more than her mother. I don't get it.
And it's known that like Antonio did not like Khalil Tatum. He has told her. So I do apologize for earlier. He told her keep Tatum away from her. So someone has the foresight to understand that this is not okay that he is being around her.
I think a lot of these those in this situation dropped the ball. I will give Antonio credit because he did speak up and say something, but as a quote unquote step parent, there's only so much that you can do. And he wasn't there. I feel like if he was there, he could have stepped in. You know, Tatum would have saw that Relisha had a male figure in her life, so he probably would have backed off. We don't know. That's all speculation. But I just feel like the adults in this situation severely, severely dropped the ball, including Shamika Young, Relisha's mom. I think grandma dropped the ball. So I was talking to my mom earlier and I was like, if I came over to see you and you were like, oh, where's the baby? And I was like, oh, with her godfather, what would you say? And she was like, I'd be telling you to put your shoes on. We get in the car and going to get the baby. Like who the hell is Khalil? If I was a grandmother or a mother, whomever, that would be my first instinct is to be like, where's the child at? Who is this random person who I've never heard of? I've never seen a day in your life, a day in my life, a day in Melissa's life. Where did this random person come from? But grandma didn't press the issue because grandma has her own stuff going on. I think grandma has her own mental health stuff going on. She has other children. She's got other grandchildren to worry about. There's also an aunt that was in the picture who had, I believe she has her own number of children. And so she was unable to like take Shamika and Relisha and her siblings in. But there were a lot of adults in Relisha's life who could have stepped in and said, hey, this isn't right. Hey, this doesn't feel right. And none of them did that. The only people, it seems like, who were in Relisha's corner were her teachers.
Right. And then it seemed like once the teachers get involved, then we see the push. But no one is questioning when they haven't seen Relisha, like no one is saying, Shamika, I haven't heard you talk about, like what is happening here? Like there is no way that my grandmother could contact my mom and not hear about how I'm doing or hear me in the background talking, especially when I'm 8 years old. I was a yapper.
Exactly.
And it's just, it's kind of off key to say, like, I understand people have their own lives. Like I'm not pushing that away, but I'm saying that you already have a person that is having endangering Relisha by having a man that you're telling her she shouldn't have him around them. And you're just like, you're not doing anything. There is no due diligence. And there is no, for example, reporting him to the center. She won't do nothing. Antonio stepping in and saying, well, I'm going to do something.
And I'm glad for Relisha's sake that she has at least one person in her corner that's like, I'm not going to stop. Because Steve actually did an update after they appeared on the episode. This was more recent. I want to say this was 2021. Where he did an update and he asked Shamika again, if I brought you back on the show, would you take a lie detector test now? And she was like, no, I still wouldn't take it. And then they like quickly patched Antonio in. And Antonio was like, I still think you had something to do with it. I'm gonna keep saying Relisha's name. And Shamika's just like, basically like, why do you keep talking about my child? Like, why are you so adamant about this? And he's just like, I'm going to keep talking about her and keeping her name out there. So, and I'm going to keep searching for her. We're going to keep looking. So it just, her body language, her attitude, it doesn't give my child has been missing
It's giving indifference. It's giving apathetic. Like, she is just not, she's unreadable as a person. And we don't even know if her test results will conclude anything, because people that are usually so apathetic like that do not have good readings on lie detectors, because they are so calm. They are so, like, nothing on their thing could be readable. I just don't think you'll be able to get a good read on her, because she just does not seem to care.
I think I'd be the perfect candidate to pass a lie detector test. Even if I was lying through my teeth, I can remain calm. It's kind of funny, because I was like, I think I could pass a lie detector test even if I'm lying. But that's the truth. And that's why sometimes lie detectors are often unusable in, like, court cases, because some people really have learned how to cheat the system and beat a lie detector test. But you and I were talking, and you were saying that Steve has, like, an expert lie detector test giver on his show.
So yeah, like, he goes through the whole thing. Like, so he will tell you, like, if this makes more sense. So, like, basically they test you for drugs, alcohol use, they test, they also give you pre-questions. So it's not like a 20-minute, testing. It's like a few hours, because they have to make sure that, so they'll ask you things like, is your name Alyssa Watson? And you'll be like, yes. They'll ask you questions like that in between time to kind of get you to basically say, like, okay, she's calm during these times on things that, of course, she would not have to lie about. So it gives a baseline, and then they go in with harder questions that have more things to do with the case, and it's things that go around it. But it's not foolproof. Like, they are only like 87%, and you cannot really get 100% everything off of a lie detector, because it is still going off of heartbeat and stressors and things like that. But it is a good candidate, because even police officers will use it, even though it's not admissible in many courts across the country. It's still a good test to figure out what's going on. And then when people fail, what usually happens is it shakes them up. And they start admitting to things, and things fall out of their mouths about the truth.
I was honestly hoping that she would take the updated test, but she wasn't interested in doing that at all. So even Steve was convinced that Shamika has something to do with Relish's disappearance, and he thinks that she had an inappropriate relationship with Tatum. So I'm just wondering your thoughts on this case. Like, what's the summary of, like, what do you kind of think happened? And, like, potentially, like, where do we go from here?
I think that one of the places that we can definitely go is definitely looking into local park areas for her. Mm-hmm. Looking into his family background, looking into, because prior to him ever being at the shelter, he was, he does have a felony record. So we can look into potential people that he has been incarcerated with. I would definitely look into more local, like, edging areas. So, like, instead of just staying in the Baltimore area, like, let's look into Virginia, like, let's look into other places, because it's quite possible, because it's easier to get to those places in those three sections, like the DC area, Baltimore, Maryland, and then Virginia, right from that space. So, like, you gotta look in those local areas, because he has so much time with her. So we're really just playing catch up, and the police officers mentioned how we are just behind the eight ball. Like, we're just behind. Had we knew about this day two of her being missing, this may be a completely different case.
Exactly. Like, it just feels so sad to me that this little girl is gone, and she's seemingly vanished. Like, the person that she was last seen with is now dead. So the only really major lead is gone. And in 2014, like, while we have a bunch of cameras, like traffic light, traffic cameras and cameras in the subway system and cameras in corner stores and things like that, there clearly wasn't enough, or maybe they just didn't do a thorough enough investigation yet to pick up on like a better timeline. Like, where is this girl and where was she for an entire month? Like, before Khalil shot his wife, before he shot himself, this girl was somewhere for an entire month. I think, like we were saying, Tatum groomed her, Tatum groomed mom, because she also was a bit of an easy target. And he took her and eventually got rid of her. Maybe she put up too much of a fight. Maybe she just, he wasn't interested anymore and he got rid of her. I think the contractor bags, I think the park that he was in, the aquatic gardens, I think all of that is connected. And like you said, I think they need to start searching these parks. They need to comb the aquatic gardens, these wooded areas, because, you know, Khalil is from the area, so he knows. He's one of those guys who knows how to get around, and he probably knows little secret doggy spot over here. They just, I feel like they need to really dive a little deeper into this investigation and into the search for her. But for real, I think that her mother kind of sold her to him and was like, hey, one less kid, one less responsibility.
Rather knowingly or not knowingly, because I just think that it was more than just a tablet and going out to these events. There has to probably be money given to her to help her out, things given to her to make sure that the mom felt comfortable. So rather her mother knowingly sold her out very knowingly. And I really feel like, yes, it leans more towards knowingly, because she kept that lie of her being him being a medical doctor, mm-hmm. really just points to she knows more than what she's saying. And the fact that she didn't take that lie detector makes me really question. I know that a grand jury did want to, and like there was like a thought that a grand jury would indict her for involvement in her daughter's disappearance, but nothing really has come from that.
Yeah, nothing's sticking, because it's a lot of it is just speculation. There seems to be no like hard concrete evidence on Relisha's disappearance. There's evidence of like, I don't know if foul play is the right word, but there's like suspicious things, like the fake doctor's note, like her last being seen with Khalil Tatum, but there's no like, here's a body, or here's, you know, we found her backpack over here. Like, there's no like hard evidence to tie mom to knowing anything. She can continue to play as if she didn't know, and it's like her word against who?
Mm-hmm. And he took him to the grave. Like, he
literally,
like, he is definitely someone that he just could not, he was not going, because first of all, as we know, prisons don't play about children. And the fact of the matter is, he knew that whatever happened to Relisha, like, was going to have him locked in prison for a very long time, and that he was not going to have an easy go about it, because he is involved with a child, and he was not willing to face the music of what he did. And that makes him a coward, mm-hmm. above all else. And the thing is, I think that also Relisha's family and Shamika's family don't also want to, I feel like Antonio, he is saying you had some involvement, something's going on, even the grandmother is, but other people in the family aren't. Like, you have her sister, Ashley Young, who is 32, she was questioned about what's going on. And she said that Shamika is heartbroken of the disappearance, and it's difficult for the family to talk about it. And it just feels like they just don't want to believe that Shamika had involvement, which is, honestly, I understand there is faith and you have to have belief that you don't want to believe the worst, but even at the least, she put her daughter in a very unsafe situation. And the minute that even she was in the homeless shelter, CPS should have been involved.
Yeah. Like, I feel like if you're a person who's had multiple reports, like, here I would make a report as a mandated reporter, I would make a report to Childline. If I had to make a report to Childline, and it's a child, Childline is reaching out to me as the reporter. They're reaching out to the parent, whatever information that I put on file, they're reaching out to that person. I don't know if she just had a good story or whatever, or I know a lot of times these agencies are overrun. Like here in Philly is DHS. DHS had to open up like an umbrella agency, CUA, to be able to like funnel the amount of cases that they have to someone else. So I can't imagine how it is in DC, their child protective services. But even still, there's multiple reports for Shamika, and these kids didn't get taken once. I've had clients to where they like hit their, can you know when your mom hits you upside your head, like stop doing that, have done that. A person has made a report and they still don't have their kids back, and it's been years. So this woman who, she has reports on her about child neglect. There's reports about excessive force in the way that she disciplines her children, and nobody said anything. And she still has custody of her children to this day, even after one of them went missing and she said nothing for 18 days about her child being missing. They dropped the ball completely.
The ball wasn't even in the court. They didn't drop it. The ball just wasn't there. There was no ball. They were playing with air. Because it is just seeming like in every way the system failed her, family has failed her. Mm-hmm. The only people that really had her back was these teachers. And we see this time and time again, like for example, with the Gabriel Hernandez case, we saw that there was a teacher that fought for him and went through all the necessary avenues for him. And he still ended up dead. So mm-hmm. you see that these teachers are fighting for these kids, and you see that there are people that are fighting for these kids, but who on the back end gets to be accountable for what happens? Like the police not following the Amber Alert. Like, what did you think? Like, if she's going for a month, it's not, like, that's instant Amber Alert. Like, she was taken. She is not there of her own volition and accord. And actually, she's a minor. She has no, like, say-so in where she's at. Like, her parent does. And her parent doesn't know where she's at, has no clue where she's at for real.
Mm-hmm.
So Amber Alert should have instantly been taken. And it's just like, nothing here is... And when you see the last video of them in a hotel together, everything is calm. Like, she has bags, plastic bags of stuff. He's walking calmly, like he's going in. Like, he is not caring what's going on. It is just seeming like this is just a regular everyday. He is cool as a cucumber in this situation. And that is scary.
So I do want to add a little, I don't know if we'll keep this here or move it, I don't know. But on the day Relisha was reported missing, Antonio wasn't even there. He was at work. He just had a long day, smoking a cigarette, minding his business. He didn't even make it all the way into the shelter before he got pulled aside by a group of detectives who ushered him into a nearby conference room. So he's just getting off work, minding his business, about to go kick it with his family. And then he's approached by all these detectives that are like, hey, come in here. So in the room, it's the detectives, him, and he sees Shamika. And he's like, you know, like, what the heck is going on? And they're telling him that Relisha is missing. He says, mom looks shocked, but he's confused because he's like, how could she be missing? You know, he just assumed that she was either with her grandmother or her aunt. So he's like, you know, it don't make no sense. She can't be missing. They were telling her like, oh, she's been missing from school for quite some time. So although he's been advocating for her, maybe some of the adults dropped the ball because they just assumed that she was with one of them. but it just wasn't enough. But
no one talks to her. Like, no one's talked to her. No one's seen, no one's checking in with each other to make sure that she's okay. So, yes, you're putting in effort to the world because you spend time there. And the fact of the matter is you can go weeks without seeing her and that's okay. Like, is there times like maybe the potentially where Relisha is staying with family members for a long period of time, but for you to never see or talk to her, come on. You can't make that math to me.
Or even just ask like, oh, what's Relisha up to? Is she with your mom? Or like, I don't know, maybe myself and the people I know are just curious and we ask too many questions, but that would have been my first thing. Like, oh, it's been a couple of days. Like, really, she's still with your mom or she with your sister? Like, where's she at? Because if you have this close enough relationship to where she's calling you dad and you feel the same way about her, you're going to want to know where your baby girl is at. And it seems like nobody was curious enough, like you said, to communicate with each other. When mom was on the Steve Wilkos show, Steve even asked the same question. Like, you weren't like calling Khalil asking where she was. And she was just like, I had no contact with them. In 18 days, you have no contact with your child after you've given him to this adult man.
Right.
And you don't have, none of your red flags are going off. So I think, like you said, the system has failed that family far before Relisha was born. Let's be honest. Like, if we were to really deep dive into this, the system failed mom, the system failed grandma, the system has failed the aunt, the system has failed this family far before Relisha was even in the picture. But for this little girl to go unnoticed, missing, well, she was noticed, her teachers noticed that she was gone, but for nobody to be like, hey, this is an urgent thing besides her teachers, that's a problem for me. And that's unfortunately how the way a lot of us who live in major, like, metropolitan areas, this is not a unique story. And I know that we're hoping by doing this podcast that we can get these stories out here and maybe it'll cause some change in the way the system works.
Yeah, because we have to make sure, because where there's a Relisha Rudd, there are thousands upon thousands of other little girls like her.
Mm-hmm.
They're in unsafe situations. They're in situations beyond, there's not of any control of their own. They are in these shelters. They are in their homes and people are preying on them. And the system should work where instantaneously, the minute she was gone, some type of report, like instant report, should have went out. Like, something should have happened, and people have to, you have to work diligently to make sure the police are accountable to this. Because the Amber Alert and these alerts should have been went out the first 2 days that Relisha was gone. One of the things that is very disturbing to me is that she's seen in a hotel with Tatum, in a motel, going in with him into the room, but there is no video of her going out. And that is making it seem like maybe that the system doesn't have anything, maybe the police have something, but it is not known if Relisha walks out of that motel alive. Or if other people come in the meantime, in between time. Nothing is known. So, and that's the creepy part. It's really like she vanished out of thin air.
So she was taken to two, and I didn't come across this in my research, she was taken to two separate motels by him. One in late February, the other the first day of March. So before she even had originally gone missing, he took her to a hotel before.
Right.
And like you said, there's no surveillance of, I don't think either of them. We just see them coming in, but where is the footage of them leaving? Or where's the footage of, because he had to leave at some point to go and murder his wife.
Right. Goes to another motel, kills his wife. And I just really think he was tying up loose ends. I think that Relisha was with the wife at some point and he may have took the wife to the motel and got her there to try to keep her quiet. But when he realized that, and this is all allegedly, this is all my personal thoughts, that she was not going to probably stay quiet if she did not see that little girl again, he killed her.
Oh, snap. So here's another thing. He was seen. He was seen hand in hand with her going into the Days Inn. And then the next day, he left the same room. They saw him leaving the same room, but without Relisha. On March 2nd, that's when he went to the nearby store, like I had said before, and purchased the 42-gallon trash bags, a shovel, and lime. Now, if anybody doesn't know, lime is usually used to cover up the smell of a dead body.
Yeah, it's definitely for decomposition and things like that. A lot of people use it, like, for example, if they're burying their pets and things like that. Like, but it's definitely a kill kit. Like, this is definitely like a murder kit.
Yep. So the police definitely got very worried. And a lot of them were saying that their hearts sank because at that point, you're kind of expecting the worst. So I don't know about where you want to stop.
Oh, we can stop right here and we can go to the discussion portion real quick.
Know something about Tatum's involvement in Relisha's disappearance that he wanted to keep a secret. Okay. We discussed it.
Yeah. We have to understand that this is a systematic problem that Relisha fell in. Escaping holes, caverns. It is a crack the size of the Grand Canyon, okay? Mm-hmm. And so it's not, she falls into multiple at-risk areas. Dealing with homelessness, her racial group that she's involved in. And so it makes her that people look past her, that she's overlooked in the system, like that her and others like her simply go unnoticed and they are really the margins of society that people don't think about and that they try not to pay attention to until cases like this come on the news.
It's really terrible. In 2016, 2 years after Relisha's disappearance, Mayor Muriel Bowser announced the closure of DC General, which was the shelter that they were living in. It would be replaced. God. Yeah, it would be replaced with 6 smaller shelters throughout the city. The building closed in 2018, but not all of the smaller shelters have finished construction. So, I'm hoping that they fix this because, you know, like we've said, Relisha is not the first child that something like this has probably happened to in that city or cities across America, and it's not it won't be the last. And if these problems are still existing, it's only a matter of time before DC has another child vanish.
Yep. And we're definitely going to see more trends like this of, you know, of cases like Relisha, which is sad, but this is going to happen because when you live in parts of society where you're in the margins of society, things happen because they're allowed to happen because the system was not built to protect you. The system was built to find things after the fact, but it's not preventative. It doesn't put in action. And something I looked into was the examination of trauma. So some of the things that I think that we all heard of fight, flight, or freeze as an extra response to feelings of trauma. But there has been an addition of a fourth one. This came out in September 11th, 21, that a fawning is something that happens to people that have experienced long bouts of trauma, and when they have a trauma response. So fawning is a response of admiration and feeling like a people pleasing to make sure that you get out of this situation. So a lot of the times you're going to find that people, and it's probably even more things, but they, you know, they like to keep them in the F's, of reactions to trauma. And if homelessness and problems in the home did not just start with Relisha, did not just start with Shamika, they, like grandmother even had issues with housing and relationships with her family. And when you grow up in that, and Shamika being a parent, and a lot of people want to now think like, oh, when I'm a parent, I'm just going to do this. But we all talk about the generational trauma that can occur in people. This is direct generational trauma. We can see it. We can touch points where trauma has touched people's lives. And so in the face of trauma and a potential hazard situation, it is easy to seem that Shamika falls in line of idea of fawning. That she looks to this person as a savior, that mm-hmm. she looks to this person as a protector, and she wants to protect this person because they've given her something, even though they're putting her through a scary time. They've also done things that have been protecting and giving. Something the man who she's laying beside has not been able to give her.
Yeah, we're talking generational poverty, generational, like, they don't mention a father or a father figure in Shamika's life. Grandma doesn't mention a grandpa. We don't really have a lot of information on where Relisha's biological father is or the father of her siblings. So there's definitely a lack of resources, protection. There's just a general lack. And I'm hoping that we as a people, we as a society, or whatever you want to call it, are able to just do better. Like, and it's usually, like you said, the more poverty-stricken communities, the underserved, the marginalized groups of people that look like you and me, and probably those of you listening who go unnoticed and uncared for. But like we've said time and time again, like, somebody cared about Relisha. She was somebody's child. She was somebody's sister. She was somebody's granddaughter. You know, she was somebody's star student. So we're just hoping that we can definitely make an impact and get her story and so many others out there, so that they won't be forgotten.
And I know it's hard sometimes, like, you know, it's easier said than done, because in marginalized groups, people that live lower income or in poverty, or we don't always have a good relationship with policing, and things like that. But when it comes down to a missing person, like, we have to speak up. Like, we have to, especially like these children, these people that are just, they're so innocent to this world, and we have to speak up, because sometimes I, like, someone that has worked longstanding with the local Baltimore area, Frederick Hill III, he's a missing person advocate. He basically said that some people don't want to speak up is because they feel like they're in on the scene. In on the scheme, so to speak. They don't want to feel like they'll also get in trouble. And they don't want to feel like they will also potentially be opening themselves up to inquiries on their own life, because they may not be living in the best conditions. They may be opening themselves up to ridicule and prosecution. And that is the scary part, is that people, even if they want to help, they need to protect their own situation, because involving the police into them can create a sense of, oh my God, I'm exposed and I could potentially get in trouble. But like I want to put preface is that you can always report anonymously to these services. Like there is no, you know, need to release your name. But if you know something, say something. If you see something, say something. It's imperative. So that way we don't go weeks and days without someone, their footsteps being tracked, because when you're going backwards instead of working right on top of what's going on, is exponentially harder to find someone. The first 48 hours of somebody being missing are imperative. And I know people are saying that like, in 48 hours, you cannot report somebody missing. Like, okay, yeah, that's what's calling 911. They don't like to press it, but call your local police station, harass them. Call them, let them know. Like the worst that can happen is that you're wrong, but get people involved as soon as possible. Call, get your local precinct's number and contact them when you suspect something. Because 911 may point you to this certain type of situation, like saying like, oh, at first, like 48 hours, like you can't report them missing. Nope, that is not a law. That's not something, that's just something they say just in case somebody pops up. But if you're saying in a missing person, the first 48 hours are imperative, that means in the first 12 hours of 8-year-old being missing, report them.
And that whole, like, and I understand where it comes from, but the whole snitches get stitches thing, like, we have to do better.
Also, we have to realize that that's not real in a certain situation. You are, yes, if you're telling about a case, if you have no involvement in it, you're not snitching.
Exactly. That's the misconception that, oh, if I say something, I'm a snitch. If you have no involvement in whatever crime or whatever has been committed, you're not a snitch. You're a witness, or you're reporting what you know. You see something, say something. And we have to come together more as communities, as people of color, because the more we embrace each other and the more we unite, the more powerful we are. And the more that we can get stories out like Felicia Rudd, like Jelani Day, while they're happening. And maybe this will prevent another child from going missing, or another one of our young men and women from ending up dead.
Right, because one voice can be seen as a whisper, but a bunch of our voices is a siren and an alert to this danger that's happened. We cannot be the ends of hashtags. We cannot be silent, because that makes us complicit. That makes us a part of the problem, and we want to be a part of the solution. We have to be.
That was wonderful. I think we should end it there. Okay. That was perfect, what you said at the end. That was perfect.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you all for listening to another episode of Crime at the Family Table. We definitely hope you continue to join us each week. Oh no. Did you hear my baby?
Yeah. You know what? What we'll do is stop the recording.
Stop it now. Whew, okay. That was another episode in the books, and that case was a whole lot of. We thank you for listening once again. We're super excited to see where this podcast is going to go in the future, and we hope that you join us next week and come back and listen.
Join us next week, where we talk about the current case of Lawrence Smith Fields from Bridgeport, Connecticut. We hope that you guys enjoy the rest of your week and you stay safe out there. Also, be prepared. In the future, we'll be having an Instagram account as well as setting up a Patreon. So we look forward to all types of new things in the future to go over with you guys. Thank you again.
Bye. Oh,